Whole Hog Sports presents the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, the premier Arkansas hoops podcast, brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. With Whole Hog Sports basketball analyst Scotty Bordelon, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Following a 9-0 start to the season, Arkansas is just 1-3 in its last four games. The latest lost 81-68 at Mississippi State on Wednesday night in the SEC opener for both teams. Matt Jones joined by Scotty Bordelon of WholeHogSports.com and Bob Holt of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. The Razorbacks are really scuffling along right now, and you kind of wonder how good this team is going to be. They've got some real problems. They were without J.D. Notae, their leading scorer in Starkville, also missing Kamani Johnson, who's suspended indefinitely. But, Bob, there's some real questions about this basketball team right now that I think they're going to have to get figured out over the next few weeks before the schedule gets really tough in February.
Yeah, it didn't necessarily expect them to win tonight. Even if Notae had played, I think they were an underdog. And, you know, Mississippi State's a pretty solid team. Not great, but pretty solid. And they've been good at home, and Arkansas has not been good at Starkville over the years. I think they fell to 7-23 in Starkville. Not all those games were in the hump. I think there were some ones in an earlier version of whatever, wherever Mississippi State played. But, yeah, I think you got to start with the defense. I mean, they look – giving up 88 points in a loss to OU, 89 points in a loss to Hofstra, and 81 points in a loss to a Mississippi State team that's not known for getting up and down the court and scoring a ton of points. You know, they're a little more deliberate, a little more half court. They don't hit a lot of threes. But so, yeah, I think, you know, Arkansas's got issues. As Eric pointed out, it's not just one thing, but I'd say the number one thing right now is they got to get their defense shored up.
Yeah, it's really interesting that this team is kind of scuffling on defense, because – you know, this team is probably longer collectively than a couple of Eric's first two teams, especially his first team. You know, his first team was really undersized. Tallest player they floored a lot of the times was Adriel Bailey at 6'6". He'd throw Reggie Chaney in there every now and then. But he ran with Adriel a lot as a small ball five. And, you know, you just never really questioned that team's effort or their, you know, their energy for the most part. I know they had a clunker, I think, at Tennessee that first year. But other than that, like, you didn't really question whether Eric's team was going to play hard. And then last year, you know, the leadership on that team was so evident. And I wrote and talked a lot last year about how Justin Smith was kind of the team dad for that roster. And I remember early in the year, last year, I was in a game that was well in hand. For whatever reason, Justin Smith, Moses Moody, and Debo, I think, were in the game together. And one of the freshman guards reached in and fouled just unnecessarily, and Justin Smith grabbed those guys by the jersey, pulled them into the huddle, and was like, stop effing fouling. And they're just not a guy, I don't think, on this roster right now who can do that. And other guys on the team listen and have that message kind of resonate. I think Devo and Jalen Williams are probably the two guys that can, but this is a really, you know, kind of senior laden, grad transfer laden roster. And I'm not sure that upperclassmen have just a ton of interest in listening to second-year guys with far less experience. But there's not a clear-cut leader right now. And, you know, when in a game that, you know, you're missing your leading scorer, you've got to have other guys step up. Like, it's a big opportunity for guys to go earn some minutes. Like, K.K. Robinson was a big chance for him tonight. Chris Likes, too. I just don't think, like, they're not getting consistent production from guys and that. The leadership and the defense, like, it's kind of complicated, but all that is playing a big part in these struggles.
We talk about last year a lot, and it's unfair, I think, to compare this year's team to last year's team for a lot of reasons. But one comparison that is easily made is that last year's team was a team that was put together, you know, during the offseason. A lot of grad transfers, you know, and in a lot of ways, it's the same way this year. It took last year's team, Bob, until probably mid-January until they really started to get together, you know, late January. And I'm talking about, you know, really gel together as a team, you know, so maybe there's a chance that could happen. Mentioned this a minute ago, their schedule, it's actually pretty conducive for getting things, you know, right here over the next few weeks. They play some of the SEC's worst teams in January. You know, when the schedule really starts getting tough is when they play, I guess Mississippi State comes into Bud Walton Arena in early February. And then, you know, from that point on, you've got a top 25 team just about every game. I think it's really important over the next few weeks to see if this roster can gel, because if they can't, boy, things really don't look good for them over the final month of their start of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have a lot of talent, but just like last year's team, they had experience and talent, but hadn't really played together. I mean, they added guys like Justin Smith and Jalen Tate and obviously Moses Moody. And by the end of the year, Devo Davis and Jalen Williams were playing really well. I just got to say this. This is Eric Musselman's seventh year as a college head coach, and the transfer market has been, you know, the formula he's used. He's obviously had some really good freshmen like Moses. He got a McDonald's All-American in Nevada, you know, the big kid who I think's at Arizona now from California. So, Eric's always found a way to figure it out. He's always won at least 20 games. We don't know if that first Arkansas team would have made the NCAA tournament. They probably had to win for sure another one, maybe another two games in the SEC tournament. But, that team, if Isaiah hadn't missed a lot of games, you know, with his injury, his knee injury, I think they would have won 22 or 23 games and been a lock for the tournament, you know. So I just got to believe Eric's always found a way to figure it out. He's always won 20 games. I think out of the previous 6 years, the five times there was an NCAA tournament, he made it four times, all but his first year at Nevada. So I just got to believe that's a track record of success. And I got to believe he's going to figure it out. But obviously they've got work to do, a lot more work probably than people expected, probably including the coaching staff. I don't think they expected to be in this situation at this point of the season.
Scotty, one of the things that has really stood out to me about this team is that, you know, whether it be the first half or the second half, there have been a lot of instances this year where they've struggled, in the first 3-4 minutes of a half. And I thought they played with Mississippi State pretty well in the first half. They were down 33-31 at halftime. I think the rebounding was even at halftime or right about even. And Mississippi State's one of the better rebounding teams in the country. And they did all that without JD Notte, who his absence was defined as an illness. We don't know if that's COVID related or not, but did hear the Mike Martin on the ESPN call or SEC Network call say that they expected Notte to be back in time for their next game against Vanderbilt. But man, the first 4 or 5 minutes of the second half really set the tone. They did not come out of the locker room very well and never seemed like they could recover after Mississippi State hit them pretty good to start the second half.
Oh, that's been kind of a consistent deal with this team, like you mentioned. And the thing that just kind of struck me was, you know, Arkansas, I thought, you know, at least offensively, they were playing okay, I thought. But they couldn't get any stops on the defensive end. And I wrote, I was looking, you know, during the live updates, I was looking at Mississippi State's point per possession figure. For the game, they scored 1.209 points per possession, which is pretty good. Anytime you're above like that 1.1 mark, you're having a pretty good night. Mississippi State hit 9 of their first 15 shots, and they were scoring nearly 1.8 points per possession early in the second half. And then with like 3 minutes left in the game, it was around 1.4. But this, like, I asked Stanley Amude, like, what is, you know, you got 6 days before your next game against Vanderbilt. What is kind of what are the things at the top of the priority list in practice between now and then? And he just kind of pointed to, you know, they've got to identify whatever it is that's not allowing them to get consecutive stops defensively. And that's how you have to win games on the road, you know, when you're not maybe necessarily shooting well or you're shorthanded, you know, like they were tonight. Without your leading scorer, you're still in a ball game at halftime. I had buddies texting me, you know, you're down your best scorer and a pretty good rebounder, and you're down 2 points at halftime. Like, you'd take that, you know, 10 times out of 10. But just the failure to get consecutive stops, and they just don't seem connected on that end defensively. And I can't really tell you what it is, whether it's like lateral foot speed or just like a lack of a second voice. Like, we know Jalen Williams, Eric Musselman says all the time that he's like the loudest voice that they have defensively, you know, calling out things for guards and that kind of thing. But they need a second voice on that defense, and kind of somebody else to rise to like a kind of a leadership role, I guess. But that's kind of the thing with me. Like, whenever, you know, teams go on runs, also, like, Arkansas, you know, hasn't always been able to swing back too. And that's, you know, that's kind of led to these three losses in the last four games. They just haven't been able to punch back.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Scotty said connectivity, I think, or something. But I was thinking right before he said that, you know, they always, teams and players a lot of times talk about being connected, especially on defense. And yeah, there just seems to be a, you know, some breaks in the chain with these guys right now. And I don't know if it's an effort thing. I don't know if it's an understanding thing. Like they just don't understand the concepts well enough yet or what, but yeah, there's still time. I mean, it's one game. And honestly, I'm not surprised they lost. I didn't expect them to get beat like that. And I agree. I thought, hey, they were within 2 points at halftime. That was a good sign for Arkansas. But they've had trouble starting games. And although tonight they were okay, I think they're up 24-23 before things started going south for them. But yeah, they've had a lot of issues putting together a 40-minute game. And you think about the Kansas State game, maybe their best win of the year, because I think Kansas State's a pretty solid team and they beat them on a neutral floor. There's a lot of K-State fans there in Kansas City. That first half, they were up by 18, but they really haven't had a half like that. Maybe the second half, you know, against the line or one of these other teams, they just seem like they have not been able to put together a full game yet. And against most teams they've played, that's been good enough for them to win, but it's not going to be good enough to win in the SEC on most nights. Maybe if you're playing Georgia, that would help. Georgia lost to Gardner-Webb tonight, yeah, big, by 17.
Yeah, big loss to Gardner-Webb by Georgia. I think Georgia's one of those teams in the front half of the SEC schedule for Arkansas that I talked about. Missouri, another one who's not playing really well. Everybody knows I'm a baseball guy. You know, I think about college baseball teams. It seems like if they don't have a midweek game, you know, they're just going weekend series to weekend series, that sometimes that first game or maybe those, you know, that first – you know, five innings of a game or something of a series opener, teams don't play well. And it's because I think baseball is a sport that's meant to be played, if not every day, you know, most days. And I think basketball is a sport to be played, you know, every 2, 3, 4 days. And they're kind of in a situation right now with their schedule where they played a bunch of games in late November and early December. Then they played OU in Tulsa. They didn't play again for 1 week until they played Hofstra in North Little Rock. Played Elon, but then they had an 8-day layoff before Mississippi State. Now almost a week until their next game against Vanderbilt. Scotty, that it feels like when you're kind of scuffling and you can't get a lot of basketball games underneath you, you can work on it and practice all you want to, but there's just something about playing a game, and you know, the lack of games right now may be hurting them a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're right. And there are some guys who are, you know, players who are going to perform better when the lights are the brightest, and they may not be the best practice players. I think it's really interesting you brought that up too. One of the big kind of big projects I did last year when Arkansas was on its big SEC winning streak, and they had, I think for the second time or third time, that game against Texas A&M canceled or postponed. Arkansas had, I think, 5 or 6 days to get ready for an Alabama game at home. Arkansas ended up winning that game. I think that was kind of the moment where Arkansas kind of announced that it had arrived that year. It was a big win for them. But Eric Musselman's teams had been really, really good coming off 4 or more days of rest. And I was looking back at some text messages I was sending Bob back in March. And at one point, Eric's teams were 42-7 when they had 4+ days to rest or prep. And they've now lost 2 of those games in a row, you know, with Hofstra and now Mississippi State. And so I'm curious if that's, you know, because you look at his track record, like it seems like the guys that he's prepping for these games are, it sounds like based on the results that they're soaking this stuff in. But now with all this time off and time to prep, I mean, that's 2 straight, like you should beat Hofstra. You should beat Hofstra if you're shorthanded. And you should, I feel like, you know, show better against Mississippi State and at least, you know, compete with them from start to finish. And they're just not. And so I think that there's a little bit of a disconnect right now. But I think you're right, Matt. I think maybe once there are at least 2 games a week where you're playing Tuesday, Saturday, or Wednesday, Saturday, I think there's a chance that they could start playing a little bit better. And like you mentioned earlier, the schedule does set up better before February. As of right now, the way that teams are looking across the league right now, at February schedule. I think after maybe a Georgia game, it's going to get really, really hard. So they need to take care of business over these, you know, next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's weird to think they're not going to be playing this weekend, but, you know, I assume that the SEC, you got all these bowl games going on, like Arkansas's bowl game is Saturday. So they really, I mean, they could play a night basketball game, but they really probably don't want to mess with that. Plus, it's hard on team. It can be hard on schools logistically if they have a lot of people who normally would be at basketball games, not at the bowl game. And of course, you know, Alabama and Georgia are playing Friday in the playoffs. Nobody could have anticipated. I mean, it's not a surprise that Georgia and Alabama are in the playoffs. But you know, you can't say in the summer, well, we can't schedule basketball games for that weekend. But you probably could assume one or both, you know, two SEC teams could be in the playoffs. So it's just kind of weird. But yeah, the only upside I see to having this many days between games is maybe that helps them get JD Notae back. You know, Eric said after the game, he has no idea if he'll be back. They just have to wait and see. It's not his call. He like I said, he would not confirm that it was COVID, but, you know, I think most logically that's probably what it is, although I don't know for sure. And of course, Chance Moore, who's barely played, you know, but you still want to admit he's a player on the team, scholarship guy, and he's out too right now. And I think he and JD maybe traveled together to Georgia, hung out some because they're both from down there. So it just kind of all adds up, you know, to me. But I'll give Arkansas credit. To my knowledge, they've never had to cancel or postpone a game going back to last year because of COVID. Any games that got canceled, it was always the other team, Tulsa or A&M, however many times that happened, or somebody else. Now you're seeing it happen a lot in the league, men and women, and really around the country. But Arkansas has been able to dodge that bullet so far. And also, I'd say good for them on that front.
After Arkansas lost to Oklahoma and Tulsa, Eric Musselman said that it was basically like back to training camp. And when he said that, I think everybody probably had a pretty good feeling that there were going to be players who started getting into the game more. And I think we've seen that in the last few games. Trey Wade is playing more minutes. KK Robinson, Jackson Robinson. Scotty, what have been your thoughts of these players who have gotten more playing time? And how do you think they fit in as they move along through the SEC?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I really like to see was Jackson Robinson getting a little bit more run. And I think against Mississippi State, I believe he hit his first three-point attempt. I think he finished 2 of 7, but he made that first one, and he was 7 of his last 11 at that point. And so you're a team that's struggling to find any kind of pulse from beyond the arc. The thing to do is put your best three-point shooter, you know, in the game and, you know, kind of let him play through some mistakes sometimes. And, you know, he's still a young player. Like, he should be technically a true freshman right now. I think he reclassified and he went to Texas A&M a year early. But as a kid's got a lot of talent. And in the preseason, Eric Musselman was saying that Jackson was, you know, he thinks he's got as much talent as anybody on his roster. And there's plenty of talent on this roster. May not always look that way, but there is. And Jackson's he's going to be a really good player. He's got one of the smoothest strokes that I've seen in a long time. I think one of the things that maybe held him back from playing early is maybe he's not the toughest guy, but he led Arkansas in rebounding tonight. And I think that was one of the few positives you could take away from that, other than Stanley Amude's game. And Eric didn't really have just a whole lot to say to my question about Stanley, other than he shot the ball with confidence. But Jackson's got he's got a long wingspan, like it's Moses Moody-like. And that's going to help, I think, Arkansas, you know, on the offensive and defensive glass when he's out there. Might be a little bit of – there might be some defensive limitations with him here and there. But, you know, I think at this point you're searching for answers that much. You let a guy like him who can give you offense – and can give you rebounding with that length. I think you let him run. You need more out of Trey Wade. Like tonight, Eric brought it up. I didn't even realize that he played 23 or 24 minutes and didn't grab a single rebound. That's not what you need. So kind of evened itself out. Like Trey had a really good game against Elon and then kind of came back to earth a little bit against Mississippi State. They need more production from their more veteran front court guys, I think.
Yeah, because Trey's a very, very physical player. He's the guy that fell on Eric at Doar's Rotator Cuff. Obviously, that was an accident. But unfortunately for Eric, it would have been better if it had been Chris Likes or somebody who'd fallen on him. I think he's about 60 pounds lighter. But, you know, yeah, Trey's a physical guy. You know, you can just tell by looking at him. He looks like he's built like a linebacker. And I'd have to go back, and I'm probably not smart enough to analyze the tape. But, yeah, it was kind of a shock that he didn't have any rebounds. And Adese Toney has been a really good rebounder, especially on offensive end, had, I think, one in 17 minutes. I don't know for sure. But, yeah, Stanley had 19 points, hit, what was it, 7 out of 10 shots or 12 or something. And, I don't know if he was ticked off because he only had 2 defensive rebounds, because he mentioned that. But he didn't exactly throw praise on him. And they've got to rebound better. Jalen Williams had a pretty solid game, 9 points, I think 9.7 boards, 6 assists. Pretty good game for him. Devo was okay. But they got to get more from those front court guys, especially when Mississippi State's being so physical. And that's where Kamani Johnson, we'll never know because he didn't play, but coming off a good game against granted a very overmatched Elon team, I think Kamani with his energy and he's a very physical guy. I think they could have used him tonight, but obviously he's been suspended, so it wasn't going to happen. But I think he could have helped him tonight.
I just don't know what's happened to Adese Toney lately. Like, he hasn't scored in double figures since December 4th. And early on in the season, like, he was probably the most intriguing storyline on the team, just because he's this undersized guy who rebounds really well and gets all of his points on offensive rebounds and cuts to the rim and transition opportunities and stuff like that. His last 5 games, he got 6 points, 0, 9, 6, and 6. Like, he's been kind of a non-factor lately. He just got to get going. Like, Arkansas just needs a lot more activity from him, just on both ends.
Seems you can really say that about just about everybody in their front court. That it seems to me like that is the area where this team is really struggling right now. There's just not, especially on the offensive side. I mean, who do you go to in the post? I don't know who you go to. Jalen Williams, you would think, is the most capable, but it seems like when he gets the ball. And he's a very good passer, but it seems like he's almost a pass first and he's not really looking for a shot. They're having to settle for a lot of perimeter shots. And this is, I think, 13 games in, you can say this is not a very good team shooting the 3. They're 8 of 27 tonight. They're well behind their opponents this year in terms of production from the perimeter.
Yeah, one thing I would like to see more is, I know Jalen, maybe his first or second bucket tonight, he posted up, I think, off the right block, and then he faced up his matchup and then knocked down like a 10 to 12 footer. I think he's got to look to just score more. Like, he can obviously pass really well, but I think he sometimes takes himself out of the game by looking to pass first and only pass sometimes. I think he put up 3 threes tonight, which is, I'm not crazy about him taking 3 threes, but at least he's not as hesitant as he has been. I think something else, though, this team is missing is, like, think about how long Arkansas's couple primary guards were last year. Moses, that long wingspan. Jalen Tate was a really good rebounder, too. I think they're missing some offensive rebounding from their guards. Because J.D. Notte's decent defensive rebounding guard, but you don't think about him grabbing misses. Devo's kind of taken maybe a step back in that regard. And then Chris Likes isn't going to give you offensive rebounds unless – he's on a fast break and he misses a layup. He's by himself. I think that's another area that, that you can turn those offensive rebounds into instant offense. Moses Moody did that exceptionally well last year. And I think that's just another area that they're missing a couple of those guys from last year's team.
I thought it was interesting. Tulu Smith, I think tonight was only his 5th game. He's had a toe injury. And he goes in there and plays 25 minutes, 18 points, 6 boards. I think he had 5 steals, which was kind of crazy for a 6'11 guy. But, Eric was talking about what a good player he is and how good he is on the block, whether left or the right side. And he said something like, our guys could learn from him. So I assume when they're reviewing this film, he's going to point out, like, hey, that's what you need to be doing, or why aren't you doing that, or things of that nature. Because he just killed him inside, and he got fouled a lot. He had 8 of 10 free throws, and I think they hit 22 of 28, and Arkansas had like 10 out of 14. So that's a big difference there. But yeah, Arkansas is just not getting a lot of. I mean, they're getting points in the paint, but not a lot right around the rim. And Connor Vanover was doing that early in the season, but he isn't getting to play a whole lot. And, you know, Jalen seems like he's almost more comfortable out there on the perimeter, kind of looking for guys cutting and passing. Like Scotty said, he's, I mean, it's great to be unselfish, and he's got a really great assist to turnover ratio for a big guy, especially. But, you know, I don't know if you want him, you know, 20 feet from the basket that much, you know, and maybe he needs to get in there and do some things. And, you know, depending on if Kamani ever gets, you know, back with the team, he could be a factor, and they got to get Trey Wade going, because I, you know, he is a physical player. And I like said, I'd really have to watch that film and say, how did this guy not get one rebound? You think one would just fall in his lap? Or he's an aggressive player, so I'm not sure. But that's a pretty, he hit a three. It's weird. You think he hit a three and didn't get a rebound? That's man bites dog stuff there for a guy like Trey, in my mind.
The Basketball Podcast of Mid-America is brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. Visit them at their location on Metro Parkway in Rogers or online at LandersToyotaNWA.com.
For all your automotive needs, shop Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers, where we guarantee you the best buying experience and best service after the sale in Arkansas. Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers.
We haven't had a podcast since Arkansas lost to Hofstra on December 18th in North Little Rock. We mentioned that there was a long layoff in that game, but you know, something that I've always thought is that teams really struggle when they're coming off of final exams. And you know, Arkansas doesn't have a great track record down in North Little Rock, you know, whatever the arena's named at that time, Simmons Bank, Alltel, Verizon. Seems like they always kind of scuffle when they play down there. You know, there are some philosophies on why that might be. It's not a true basketball arena. There might be some things with that perception. But Bob, I've always thought it might have to do with the fact that, you know, they've gone through final exams and then there's that quick turnaround for a game the next day. And, you know, Hofstra, we've been paying attention to them all year. They looked like they were a capable team. And, man, they just outplayed Arkansas when they played down in Central Arkansas.
Yeah, I wasn't totally shocked that Hofstra won the game. I certainly wouldn't have predicted it. But I thought, you know, Hofstra was a pretty good three-point shooting team. They were averaging up just under 11 made threes a game. So they were scoring, you know, almost 33 points per game on threes. Arkansas' three-point defense was you know, like 320th or whatever it was. And but Arkansas, I think, actually hit more threes. You know, Hofstra won that game by great penetration, dribble drive. You know, but yeah, Arkansas, whatever you want to call that building, it's been a heartbreak hotel or whatever for the Hawks, because they're 12-10 there, and they've lost to a lot of mid-majors. I mean, they've lost, obviously, to Hofstra, to Mercer, to UAB, and to Appalachian State, and they've lost to some big-name teams with big-name coaches like Oklahoma State, Nettie Sutton, Bob Knight, Texas Tech, you know, Bill Self, a couple of his good Illinois teams, but and the crowds down there are always really good. You have to give the fans a lot of credit. They turn out in big numbers. They're really excited. I mean, honestly, you know, most, unless Arkansas has played a really big non-conference game, the crowds in North Little Rock are the best crowds that Arkansas has played in front of to that point of the season. It's obviously going to get better when SEC play starts. So you can't blame the fans. If you want to say it's weird depth perception, you know, Hofstra didn't even get to go to that arena for a shoot around because they had travel issues. They were supposed to fly in on Friday. They got stranded in Washington, D.C. They flew a charter and they got in about noon, about 7 hours before tip off. And I think did a little walkthrough at their hotel ballroom or whatever. So they didn't even get to come to the arena until the game. So, you know, you can't really blame it on that, I don't think. I mean, it's a good point to bring up, but, you know, it's weird. It's hard to figure why Arkansas has not played better down there, but, you know, the numbers don't lie. They're 12-10, and they really don't have what you'd call a real impressive victory. They've lost some mid-majors, lost some real good programs, and all their wins have basically been against, you know, mid to low-major teams.
Nobody saw the game. It wasn't on TV. It wasn't streamed either. That's kind of a recurring issue that they have for North Little Rock games. Turned around, they played Elon a few days later. Kind of similar script, Scotty, as to a lot of their other games. Slow out of the gate, big run near halftime, pulled away, and then in the second half played quite well, ended up winning that game by close to 30 points. That was a good get-right game, but it didn't help them a whole lot going into SEC play.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, Kamani Johnson and Trey Wade were, you know, they were catalysts in that game. And I think a lot of people walked away from Arkansas beating Elon by 26 and saying, hey, Arkansas's figured out its front court problems. I'm kind of sitting back thinking, well, Trey Wade and Kamani Johnson aren't going to solve all of Arkansas's problems. Like, it's great that they had a good game and they did it. It's against Elon. Like, that's a little bit different than consistently doing it in the SEC. I don't have any doubt that Kamani could have, you know, if he was able to play, he could have come in and, you know, at least thrown, been another body to throw it, you know, Tolu Smith or Garrison Brooks, you know, against Mississippi State. But he's not going to be a guy that consistently gets you 15-7 and three blocks or whatever it is in less than 20 minutes. It's just not going to happen. I think Trey Wade's numbers, 7-5-3, I think against Elon, were a little bit more of what you may be able to see from him, even though I don't think he's that great of a shot blocker. Elon wasn't a big team, so that, you know, that kind of played into those two guys' hands. But you got to credit them for the energy they brought in that game. And then Jackson Robinson, I think he had a career high 14 points and started. I mean, he was shooting the ball really, really well. I just, you know, that I keep thinking back to that Hofstra game and the fact that, you know, Arkansas was outscored by 18 in points in the paint. And I think the next press conference after the Hofstra game, Eric said that Arkansas's game plan was to, you know, just hammer Hofstra in the paint. They didn't do it. They didn't do it at all. Like, Bebe Iola hammered them in the paint. Like, he had a double-double and looked like the best player on the floor most of the night. It was just another instance of Arkansas not being able to string defensive stops together, and they got hurt in middle pick and roll quite a bit. And, you know, they were right there, you know, toward the end of the game. And then I think a Hofstra bright corner three, you know, kind of put the game out of reach. And that's just, again, another problem Arkansas's got, just recognizing perimeter threats and getting out to them. And, you know, like Eric likes to say, contest and, you know, with the force that would, you know, separate your shoulder or whatever. They're just not doing some of the things that are being preached. And it's obviously a little bit of a concern because you've got, you know, after, you know, the next couple of weeks, your schedule gets really, really tough. But if you don't win the games that are right in front of you, things could get, you know, pretty ugly.
There was a lot of expectations for this Arkansas team in the preseason. They were picked to finish third in the conference. I think that, you know, what has happened over the last couple of weeks has been pretty eye-opening, that it's probably tempered expectations a little bit. I wonder, for the two of you, as they go through SEC play now, what are the expectations that you think you have for this team? What's kind of the bar you think that's set for them?
I'd say if they can have a winning record in SEC play, that would be, you know, a plus. I think that would probably get them in the NCAA tournament, especially if they can beat West Virginia here. That's a big – I mean, that was a big game for the season. It's a really big game now because last time I looked, West Virginia was 11-1. It's had a couple of pretty good wins. And but yeah, the SEC is good this year. I mean, not quite as good as we thought it was maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, but you know, Florida's got some real good wins. You know, Alabama and Tennessee play. Auburn's probably maybe the best team right now. Auburn or Kentucky. Auburn's playing really well. They really put it on LSU, who I think is a pretty good team. They beat LSU by 15 tonight, I think. And you know, LSU's a good team. So I think if Arkansas could go 10-8, maybe even 9-9, you know. That's a realistic goal. I mean, before the season, I thought maybe they could win, you know, 12 or 13 SEC games. I don't really think that's doable now, partly because of Arkansas' struggles, and also I think the league's really good. But I think, you know, if you have a good league and you have a winning record, that's going to impress the selection committee.
Yeah, I think as of right now, based on what we know at this moment, you know, I think if Arkansas can go 500 and just maybe find a way to finish in the top half of the league, you know, that would be pretty solid. And then everything's kind of a one-off, you know, at the SEC tournament. Arkansas looked pretty decent on a neutral floor in Kansas City, not so much in Tulsa, but they do have some, you know, experience playing on a neutral floor. But it's just weird, man. Like, I didn't think Arkansas was going to be that good mid-January last year. And now we're kind of in the same situation this year. I'm not completely hitting the panic button at this point, but they got to get some things figured out. I think right now they'd probably, you know, if they could finish top half of the league, that'd be pretty good.
Arkansas returns to the floor on January 4th. They'll play Vanderbilt at Bud Walton Arena, first game back at home in quite a while. We'll be back with another podcast after that game. For Bob Holt and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you next week.
The preceding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.